Hi, this is John Mosby, author of Fearful Symmetry, the essential guide to all things Highlander, and you are listening to Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast on the Fandom Podcast Network.
Seven centuries have passed since the Earth plunged into darkness. Seven centuries since the Jettator swore to regain from man his lost knowledge and freedom. All the immortals took the oath, all except one who dominates the world. But soon an immortal will come to confront him. His name is Quentin MacLeod. He is the Highlander.
Eternal power to Cortan! Eternal power to Cortan! Welcome, Highlander fans, to episode 76 of Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. On this show, we cover all things Highlander, including guest interviews, movies, TV shows, books, audiobooks, games, special events, and another look at the Highlander animated series and more. I'm Kevin, one of your Blood of Kings hosts. However, I don't do this alone. You know I need that guy, my fellow mortal brother and sword fighter and fellow Highlander aficionado. With me is my co-host, Norman. Welcome, Norm.
Perhaps I should have done that in my bathroom. I didn't feel like
that
I had...
That would have given it that little bathroom echo.
I needed more echo in my performance. And I think I'm broken, so I think I'm going to do the entire episode here on Blood of Kings in this accent.
You're not going to do it like that.
Hold on a second. All right, I'm good. All right. Well, that's tough.
Well played, sir. That was fun.
Thank you.
So, hey, hold on. Let's go back in time real quick. Mm-hmm. Last episode, Blood of Kings 75, our kind of silver anniversary.
Diamond anniversary.
Yeah. We looked back on the Highlander TV series DVD box set that just came out, and we gave our grade on it and such, and that was a lot of fun. And I decided to pop it open and actually start watching it, because remember, I had just opened up my box live on the air recording, and you'd already opened up and checked it out, because coming soon, we're doing Highlander Season 2, See It or Skip It. So I thought that I would pop those in and kind of check it out on, because I think I left off with Unholy Alliance Part 1 the last time.
Okay.
So I decided to put it in Unholy Alliance Part 2 and start checking it out. And, you know, you could tell the quality is probably not quite as sharp as, like, the original DVD transfer. But still, it's pretty darn good. And for the price, I am really happy with that product.
What are you watching it on? Just the listeners know, by comparison, what your level of playback quality is.
I'm playing it through a Blu-ray player,
okay,
and it's through an Aquos HD TV that I've had for several years now, and I actually like that thing. It's got a lot of nice inputs in it still and everything. So,
okay.
Yeah, so that's what I'm listening to, or sorry, that's what I'm watching it through right now. What was funny, too, when I was watching part two of Unholy Alliance, remember that scene where Horton is in the helicopter trying to shoot at Duncan while he's fighting Mr. Hook?
Yeah.
And he has that very weird rifle with like a pistol cylinder in it type thing. So I put a little post on Blood of Kings saying, no, normally we talk about swords, but you know, I know a lot about guns, but I've never seen that type of gun before. So I didn't know if it was a an actual like prop that was used or if it was some custom job from the props department. And of course, Blood of Kings fans are smart. They came to my rescue and showed me some pictures of, I guess, what it's based on. So,
those are our fans on the Facebook page.
Yes, yeah. The Blood of Kings Facebook page. So, yeah. So, anyway, that was really cool. I am enjoying the DVD, and I recommend it to anyone, especially at the Amazon price of $39.99. You know, get it pretty quickly with shipping if you have Prime.
So, that's a good price.
It is. It is. And again, I love that packaging, man. It's really, really cool. So, All right. I'm going to tease the show topic. Welcome to a look back again at the Highlander animated series. We're back, Norm. We're back.
Yeah. I love visiting the animated series from time to time because I said this when we teased the this episode content in 75. I said the animated series, at least for us, it's new Highlander content. So yeah. We're actually watching stuff that we actually haven't seen, which is kind of fun.
It is. It totally is. So right now, this episode is part one, Blood of Kings 76, the Highland animated series. And we're covering the episodes Valley of the Thorn Pods and Fallout. And next episode, you're going to get part two of this. Where we're going to cover Courage of Love and the setup. Now, Norm, we wanted to make sure that we actually covered the right episodes this time.
Right.
Because you remember, we had different versions of the Highlander animated series, and a couple of episodes were out of order. So we made sure that we got our notes, crossed the T's and dotted the I's on that.
I was seconds away from belting out some Peter Cetera with The Courage of Love. I know it's The Glory of Love.
I did it all for the courage of love. There you go. Yeah, that's what I'm talking
like
about.
Like a knight in shining armor from a long time ago. No, it's terrible. Terrible.
I thought I was right next to him singing that song a cappella.
Karate Kid Part 2, bro. Karate Kid Part 2.
All right, man. And I was going to ask you to sing the next one, but then I'm like, nah, let's not. Norm, why don't you let our listeners know how they can find us and Blood of Kings?
Well, you can always find Blood of Kings on the Fandom Podcast Network master feed. That's fpnet.podbean.com. You can also find us, FPNet, on the Podbean app. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play for your Android users and on the podcatchers that you use. You can find us on Instagram at Blood of Kings Pod. You can find us on Facebook on our Facebook awesome group page, Blood of Kings, a Highlander fandom group. And the CCG page, the Blood of Kings, a Highlander CCG page, is getting a lot of steam.
Yeah,
see what I did there?
Wait, I see what you did there.
Thank you very much. It's getting awesome. A lot of attention because of what's going on with the online CCG on Steam that you can listen to on Blood of Kings 74 and how to start playing the online game with Mike Sellers, Kat Cedar, Stephen Philip Rice. Many of our friends that are on there, and try it out. Listen to Blood of Kings 74. If you are a gamer and if you love Highlander, make sure that you get online with that game. If you'd like to contact us through email, you can email us at bloodofkingspodcast@gmail.com. You can tweet us on Twitter at bloodofkingspod. And you can find Kevin on Twitter where?
Twitter and Instagram at Spartan_Phoenix.
And you can find me on Twitter at Starfighter1701 and on Instagram at SoCalSwordFighter. You can find Mike performing great feats of magic and dodging Damon Case at Immortal Chimoli.
It's weird. SoCalSwordFighter has a full, like, new meaning now that you're actually sword fighting.
You know, I remember that scene from Mavericks. Like, I am a gambler. You are a gunfighter. And since you are alive, you're pretty probably good at it.
I love that scene in that movie. That's great.
Love that movie, yeah.
Please leave us a review on iTunes so new fans can find us easier. We love 5-star reviews, of course, but we love any feedback in general. Please head on over to iTunes and search Fandom Podcast Network. And if you like what you're hearing on Blood of Kings, give us a shout out there on Blood of Kings. Norm, we have a T Public store. We have some new stuff coming up soon, right?
Absolutely. And we actually advertise this a little bit on Blood of Kings 75. You know, we've kind of refreshed our look here on Blood of Kings and made things a little bit shinier and sparklier and giving our fans just something like something forward to look forward to. So yeah, please check out the new designs for Blood of Kings, the new t-shirt designs on our T Public store. So visit www.tpublic.com/user/fandompodcastnetwork or search Fandom Podcast Network on T Public. You'll find all of our designs there, and not just for Blood of Kings, but for several of our other shows here on the Fandom Podcast Network. And the proceeds that we generate from Fandom Podcast Network sales help us pay for our server fees because podcasting does cost money.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. We do this for love.
The glory of love. Sorry, I can't help myself.
Oh, that's right. Don't even bother trying to help yourself. I love it. Well, I thought we would dive right back into Joe's like we do weekly because we got some stuff we want to talk about. Right, Norm?
Absolutely. Let's do this thing.
All right. Let's go into Joe's. All right. I'm not seeing Joe around. He's left one of his managers doing so. I wonder where he went. The place is kind of a mess. Did something happen in here?
I think he heard my singing and just bailed.
Well, the Watcher Roundtable happens to be open, and it's nice and round. Why don't we just go sit over there? But it looks like there was a tussle or something. I don't know. Maybe we had to throw out some hooligans doing some shenanigans last night. Who knows?
Hooligans so. Doing shenanigans.
That's right.
Next on Fandom Podcast Network.
Well, we always do our Sword Experience update here. And there's pretty much, as we said from last week, all the dates are still the same. You can go to swordxp.com for more information, with the exception of one new confirmed date. And I did want to mention that. And that is in Canada, September 8th, Brandon, Manitoba Comic Con. And of course, you have to please remember, if you're interested, I know Priscilla's doing it, is Belize, the big Belize trip, which is like a 5-day event, which a lot of fun stuff is going to be going on there, which is kind of its first of its kind regarding the Sword Experience. And I know that also Sword Experience is having some package deals, too. If you do more than one of the European events, I think you get some discounts and some cool stuff. So make sure you go online and check that out. Norm, I want to talk to you about this whole sword fighter thing. There's something that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, and I'm not usually one to like boast about these things, but I will boast. It's our show. I guess I can do what we want, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So at my HEMA club, Historical European Martial Arts Club, it's not my club, the club that I attend, South Coast Swords in Santa Ana, California. One of the instructors there, Miles Cupp, who is just absolutely prolific and fluent in Italian rapier, he taught a month-long course during the month of April, studying and focusing on the Italian masters, specifically two masters, Francesco Alfieri and Salvatore Fabris. And throughout the course of his lessons and all of the I guess all of the classes that he focused on for these Italian rapier masters, he basically culminated that entire month into one tournament. Now, the tournament wasn't about scoring points. The tournament was staying in the style of the Italian masters. So it was the first, actually, Italian rapier style tournament, quote-unquote style tournament. And you scored points based on his interpretation of you executing the Italian master style.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really...
Wow.
It was intense. Cool. Yeah, it wasn't just because in tournament fighting, you can throw an attack or you can try and point and all that kind of stuff. And that's all well and good when it comes to tournament fighting or what you see like in the Olympics when they're just throwing out these really fast strikes. But what Miles really wanted to do is he wanted his students to focus on the lessons that he taught. So making sure that you're doing proper Italian lunges, proper giradas, proper use of the form and the footwork and the technique. And he scored you on things that he taught you so that you stayed in the style and fought cleanly and in the respect of these Italian masters.
Wow. That is really cool. What a history lesson too. So what happened?
So there were two tournaments that day. There was a single rapier tournament and then a rapier and dagger tournament. And so there were about, I think there were 10 of us. So each one of us had to fight 5 times in this Italian style and we all fought different opponents, and I ended up actually winning the style tournament for single rapier.
Woo!
Yeah.
give it a little quick little detail of what it was that you know that you think that contributed to you winning. Apparently, maybe your sword.
Well, yeah, but I have to give a lot of credit to Miles because Miles has been working with me a lot on the side and during practice and then during sparring, free sparring at the end of practice with rapier. He knows how much I love rapier, and rapier is one of the reasons why I'm in Historical European Martial Arts, thanks to Highlander, thanks to Duende. Let's be very specific about it. So between that and then another school that I attend, their classes, Tattershall School of Defense in Long Beach, I've learned a lot of rapier over the course of the last few months, over the course of the last obviously 2 years that I've been doing HEMA. And everything just kind of crystallized that day. And I take my rapier fighting very seriously because I told you this offline. Rapier is a murder weapon.
Yeah,
it is. I mean, for people that know rapier, rapier is taking that point and putting it as far through somebody's eyeball socket as you possibly can, or through their heart or through their head. It is not. Right. It's not a weapon. Yeah, it is brutal. I mean, rapier fighting is brutal. So, but at the same time, though, it is also very elegant, and the Italian style is also very. It's just of that period. You know, it's very culturally significant.
So you won the single rapier contest. What did you win? Did you win a trophy? Did you win like a handshake, slap on the butt, tattoo? What'd you win?
Better than a trophy, better than a handshake, better than a tattoo. Miles promised me, or promised the winners of the tournament, a meal at In-N-Out on him.
Nice! Well, hold on. Does that include the secret menu?
It may. I might be... If I have it in me, I might go for a 4x4.
Dude, I was just going to say at least a 3x3. Dude, that is so cool. That's better than any trophy right there.
Right?
If you're from California, you know it.
Hit that secret menu.
Oh, that's great, man. Right. That is really, really cool. Well, congratulations, man.
It was a lot of fun, and everyone was fantastic. Everyone fought really well, and I was very proud to take the top spot that day for single rapier.
Okay. I'm going to do a quick impression. I need you to see if you can guess who the impression is. Okay, ready?
Okay.
Here we go.
Yeah. Orson Welles, Citizen Kane.
No, that was Anthony DeLongis and Efron McAsh giving you the slow clap.
Oh, that's so nice. Thank you, Anthony, and thank you to Efron for doing that. So,
but good guess on Citizen Kane.
I thought you were doing the Citizen Kane thing. So, yeah.
Well, before we head on out of Joe's, I got something that I wanted to share. As I updated last week, Aaron and I have confirmed our travel arrangements and our B&B and hotel stays for our Scotland trip coming up in July, and we kind of put together a little itinerary. And so on July 16th we're heading into Glasgow.
Nice. Yeah,
gonna meet up with Stephen McLeod,
of course.
Next day we're gonna go to Dune Castle. Remember what castle that was?
Dune Castle. Is it from Outlander?
Yes. And you're banging two coconuts together.
Oh, is that from Bunny? Is it from Holy Grail?
That's what I've been told, yes.
Oh, wow. Cool.
So we're going to go check that out. And then we're going to be, that day, we're going to be heading up to Glencoe area, where we'll be obviously checking out the battlefields.
Right, okay? Sure.
And then we're going to go heading up a little bit north west to Moir Beach, where we're going to try and find the famous... running as the stag, as you say it,
the
and experiencing
stag.
The quickening. Mm-hmm. Then we're going to take a ferry over to Isle of Skye, and then we're going to drive up through Isle of Skye, and then we're going to go back over to the right and head into Dorney. We're going to stay there for two nights because that is near some castle that was in the movie Eileen Donan, I think it is, something like that.
I heard it was an Irish castle.
So we're going to be near there, but and we're going to do a quick visit to, of course, the most iconic castle of all time there in a Highlander film. But then we're going to spend a day, the next day, up in Isle of Skye.
Yeah.
And we wanted to visit. She wants to visit Fairy Glen, where I went last time, mm-hmm. where Stardust was filmed and many other films. And it's just got these great little fairy crop circles mm-hmm. and beautiful little fairy looking bushes and trees. It's just beautiful.
Yeah.
We'll try to do Dunvegan Castle. But what she wants to do, what I did last time, she wants to go to Old Man's of Store, or Store of Old Man. You know what this is?
Yeah.
It's where Prometheus was filmed, mm-hmm. one of the locations.
Yep.
But when I tried to do it with my buddy David, weather sucked. And it was raining, and you couldn't see like 300 feet in front of you. So we had to climb halfway up, and then we were like, let's leave. So we're going to try to do that. Then we're going to head back down to Dorney, stay the night there, of course, visit Eileen Donan Castle, do the tour. And then the next day we're going to head up to Inverness. We're going to stay up there for a night. We're going to stop near Loch Ness, of course. Mm-hmm. Then we're going to go visit the Culloden Battlefield.
Of course.
And some other cool stone formations and stuff like that. And then after the next morning, we're heading down to Edinburgh, where we'll stay there for two nights, because the last time I was in Edinburgh, I was only there for like 3 or 4 hours.
Crazy, yeah.
And we're going to see if we can meet up with Mark Telfer and maybe a couple other people. So And then we'll head back to Glasgow. So, yeah, we got a whole week planned there. We're really excited.
Make sure you go to the World's End.
Oh, I know. Yeah. I thought about that, yeah. I remember walking past it last time I was there and seeing it. You know, what do they call it? The Royal Mile?
Yeah, it's at the very end of the Royal Mile. Yep.
Yeah, so I did that last time, but this time I actually wanted to do a tour of the castle there because I haven't done that.
Yeah. And
check out some other cool stuff. So it's just a beautiful town. I wish I could spend more time last time,
right.
But I will this time.
Sweet.
So there we go. Well, Norm, I say we are done with Joe's. He needs to clean this place up anyway for our next visit.
Mm-hmm.
So with that said, let's head on out of Joe's. Okay, here we are, meat of the show, as I like to say. This is part one of two of our look back at the Highlander animated series with the episodes of Valley of the Thorn Pods and Fallout. Now, I thought that we would dive a little bit deep into what, you know, some of the characters and stuff like that, and a quick little summary for some of those that are new to Blood of Kings and also maybe have not go back and listen to our other episodes of covering the animated series. The animated series follows the adventures of Quentin MacLeod, the last of the MacLeods. It's set in a post-apocalyptic world where almost barren of technology and civilization. The Jedidors, or Immortals' Oath, was to lay down their swords, and when Cortan decided not to swear the oath, began to wait for the Highlander. Jedidors are immortals in Highlander, the animated series, who they have renounced the game and instead focus on guiding the remnants of mankind back to prosperity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've touched on this before, Norman, that, of course, this being kind of a kid's show, they can't do the whole decapitation thing going on,
right.
So they had to find out how do we do quickenings and sword fights without actually cutting people's heads off.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of went this kind of little PC way, but as we're watching these episodes, it's pretty, pretty cool. So what it is that a Jedidor is able to pass on their powers and knowledge to another immortal without being beheaded.
Right.
The Jedidor and the immortal, they gift with their powers. Both grasp the Jedidor's sword, and a quickening takes place. And in the result of this, the Jedidor's sword shatters, and they become mortal. And you see this in the opening credit sequence.
Mm-hmm.
So this is kind of interesting. I just want to touch on this real quick. This was a way to kind of get around the violence of, you know, week-to-week beheading. But as we see, this is playing an important part of the plot.
With all the Jedidors, yeah. Because now we're seeing the Jedidors, and they've survived 700 years to wait for this messiah-like figure with Quentin MacLeod so that they can surrender their quickening to him and live on the rest of their lives.
Yeah. Exactly. Because the way this is setting up is Quentin MacLeod is kind of the chosen one.
Right.
And he's the one that is now in the series, and we'll get into it more. This other Ramirez is on this quest to find all the other Jedidors that will then, of course, you know, pass their knowledge onto him.
Mm-hmm.
It was contended by the series, which was made before Highlander Endgame, that Cortan, the evil guy here, took Connor MacLeod's quickening. So Connor MacLeod had been killed, according to this timeline.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, we had, I wanted you to talk about the animation quality. We've had some little issues with this. I got to tell you, though, Norm,
mm-hmm.
as I'm watching it now, I become way forgiving of it.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of digging a lot of the scenery, I guess. What do you think?
Well, because we love all types of animation, you're comparing this, or we're comparing this to like Japanese animation or like really good animation of when we were watching like a lot of cartoons from like Saturday morning or whatever. It wasn't the greatest animation in the world. It wasn't the worst. But I think that as we get from episode to episode to episode and actually see kind of like the structure and the continuity and the consistency, it's not bad. You know, it really isn't. I can see why people, if they actually got this or watched it on YouTube or whatever, if they saw it, they're like, you know, it's not really for me. But I think that that is a very... it's a first blush response to something that they just may not like, but it's settled for us.
I think it's settled too because it's become kind of a character of the show itself, and it's defining its look.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, because now we're seeing like the hunters, you know, they have a certain look. Cortan's standard, that kind of almost kind of like a a flaming mouth or a kind of like some kind of weird, you know, bite mark or something like that.
Right,
you know, that
right.
has a certain
the
look.
Symbol.
The symbol, yeah. The stand looks a certain way. You know, the technology looks a certain way. So I hate to say it, but because it's so consistently mediocre, it's actually good.
That makes sense, yeah.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah, no, you're right, yeah. Well, we thought we'd touch on the main characters real quick. Of course, Quentin McCloud is the main character of the series. He was raised by the Dundee clan, and he was killed by Eric, and then he became resurrected as an immortal. When Cortan sought to capture the Dundee, usually fights with a sword that belonged to Connor McCloud, but also carries a boomerang that he is quite skilled with. And I was actually happy to see that return in one of these four episodes.
Uh-huh. So.
Then, of course, we have to have Ramirez, but this Ramirez is named Don Vicente Marino Ramirez. The Jeditor asked with the guiding of Quentin and making sure that the other Jeditors keep the oath. He trains Quentin in the art of combat as well as philosophy and some history, and many episodes feature flashbacks of his life. Mm-hmm. Then we've got the bad guy, Cortan. All hail to Cortan!
Eternal power to Cortan. Eternal power to Cortan.
Exactly. He was one of only three immortals, interesting, three immortals not to take the oath, declared himself the winner of the game and took control of the earth, rules from his city fortress of Moganda. Then we have, I guess, his second in command, Eric, one of Cortan's generals, leader of Cortan's army, the Hunters. Mortally wounded Quentin's adopted mother and killed Quentin, triggering his immortality. His left eye and hand are cybernetic. Then we have Malone, Cortan's shirtless jester sidekick with a puppet-like long nose, white glam hair, and bells on his arms. And I always love saying that he could have been the only male member of the band Jam.
I was sad that we did not see Malone in this group of episodes.
Yes. Then, of course, friends of Quentin, we have Clyde of the Dundee, Quentin's adoptive younger sister. Though raised as his blood relative, she often ends up in danger during missions, but on occasion serves as a distraction. Then we have their kind of pet, and that is Gaul, Clyde's pet Gran, a hybrid of ape and canine. Like all Grans, Gaul is highly intelligent and is very protective of both Clyde and Quentin. His animal sense sometimes helps Quentin in dangerous situations.
I want Gaul to, like, snarf. Snarf, 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 snarf.
I want a plush version of Gaul. And then you squeeze it and it says snarf, snarf.
Snarf, snarf, snarf. And if anyone can get that reference, you let us know. I'll high five you.
There we go. All right. So here we go. We're going with episode 10. That's how far we're in right now.
Yeah.
And this is Valley of the Thorn Pods. Episode aired December 4th, 1994. Quick synopsis here. Ramirez takes Quentin to see the immortal Sahevi, who possesses the knowledge of botany and agriculture. However, the forest he lives in has been taken over by man-eating plants. The locals blame Sahevi and even accuse him of treachery.
Think about this. So this was December 1994, and then Highlander started in September of 1992. So this was kind of like going in, you know, not, I wouldn't say like lockstep with the series, but it was going around at the same time.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Now, I know you've got some notes here, Nora. I'm going to go ahead and touch on yours here. Mm-hmm. I want you to touch on the metaphor of the great catastrophe.
So when I watched this episode, this episode was about trying to get Quentin to Sahevi, who has the quickening power of botany. And the Great Catastrophe, I'm not going to spoil what the Great Catastrophe is, but the Great Catastrophe and what has left behind, it's left behind basically a world of ash and ruin.
Hold on, hold on. We're going to spoil it in the next episode or in like 15 minutes.
I guess so. Wait for 15 minutes from now. Wait with bated breath. So the Great Catastrophe has left behind this world that's in ruin. And I guess there are, like, the Jeditors have all preserved very specific qualities of humanity, whether it is like how to bring clean water, you know, back to the world, how to bring certain elements that humanity needs to move forward. Where in this case, Sahevi brings back botany. So when I watched this episode, I was kind of like, is this kind of like the the ecological shaming that we should feel because, you know, we basically right. left this earth to rot and we've destroyed like agriculture and we've lost the ability to rehabilitate the planet through botany and biology and creating an ecosphere.
Well, also in the episode, you get the feeling that, of course, after the great catastrophe, people themselves start over. They're relearning things.
Right.
They've forgotten, you know, like the cars aren't around anymore, only relics.
Right.
They don't know how to use them.
Right.
So they're having to relearn these things. And Sahevi, botanist, knows that plants can also help, you know, with healing and healing properties and stuff like that. And of course, his immortality and his work have spooked these people that live near the thorn pods.
Right. And it's an interesting thing when you're dealing with kind of like I guess, post-apocalyptic dystopian future where science is always in some way misinterpreted for magic or sorcery or something demonic,
yeah.
right?
Yeah,
so exactly. Now you have these Jedediters who've been around for 700 years, maybe more, and they have the knowledge and they've preserved this for the coming of the McLeod. So when, say, someone like Sahevi is trying to rehabilitate his ecosphere or practice the art of botany or biology, the sky people, you know, or the people that...
They live in, like, Ewok-type huts
totally.
Above the ground.
Yeah, totally. Because they're up in there in the trees. You know,
because they're trying to stay away from the thorn pods.
Right. And then when they see someone like Sahevi, they're like, well, what is this guy doing? You know, he knows all of this arcane knowledge. He obviously must be a wizard.
And we should clarify, the thorn pods are basically these kind of gigantic Venus flytraps that live closer to the ground, and they actually are large enough to, capture people and eventually, I guess, digest them or kill them or something. So the trick is finding out how to get rid of these.
Right, and there's kind of like a thing where when ecology goes kind of sideways, it's because there are no natural predators anymore, or... especially with any kind of balanced biosphere or ecological scenario, if there's not a natural predator to something, then it runs rampant. So this is the thorn pods. They've run rampant because they believe, the sky people believe that Sahevi did something and made the thorn pods just go crazy. So, yeah.
Yeah. So what happens is Ramirez gets captured by one of these thorn pods.
Yes.
And then I guess it's then Quentin and Clyde come across one of these sky people children and kind of guides them through to the village. And of course there's always that guy in the village that's like the religious zealot, you know, and that, you know, is afraid and paranoid. And one of them, I think his name is Turgis. He's the paranoid leader. He's not the spiritual leader that they have there as well, but he wants to burn like the whole forest down.
With the fire water.
Yes, with the fire water, which I believe is some gasoline that they find or were trying to find from an old like downed plane or something like that, I think.
Yeah.
But instead, this priestess character decides to say, hey, maybe Sahevi can help. Mm-hmm. And so Turgis gives him 48 hours to go with Quentin to try and find this and fix it. Of course, he's just trying to get him out of the way because he's planning on burning the forest down anyway.
Right.
Then eventually they find Sahevi and they start working with him. Now, there's something called the Red Phasmas, which I think are referring to the bees, if I remember correctly.
I think that that's the thing is I was a little unclear about that because I know that there were bees in the story and I like seeing bees because bees pollinate and they create flowers and all
yes,
that kind of
but
stuff.
Yes, but they were like type of bees that were hibernating or something. And they finally found them before Targus was able to set fire to everything.
Mm-hmm.
And of course at this time the thorn pods were coming closer to them and getting ready to attack them. And then this is when this is when Sahevi decides to... They hide in an old plane that's been crashed.
Right.
And Sahevi gives... thinking that, okay, if the thorn pods are surrounding us, there's only one way to get rid of them. I'm going to give you my quickening, and the power of the quickening will destroy the immediate ones around us. So that's what he does. Mm-hmm. He gives... Of course, he does the sword, and the sword breaks, and then those surrounding thorn pods are destroyed. But then they find the hibernating bees, I guess, mm-hmm. and release them. And then they're the ones that then go down into the forest and eventually pollinate and or slash destroy the thorn pods.
Yeah, they were the natural predators of the thorn pods.
Yeah. So what's really cool about this episode is that, you know, and remember, the first time we covered this, I wasn't having this.
Right.
Let's be honest here, Norm, right? I was just like, it's Highlander, we got to cover it. I wasn't having it. Then the second time we did it, I started turning around on it.
Think about this. So we're in episode 76. The first time we covered Highlander, the animated series, was episode 26. That was 50 episodes ago.
Yes, that's right. And then we did another run of them.
Yeah.
Did another run of them.
At episode 43. So, yeah, we're...
Because the one thing that I had mentioned, you had mentioned, and we've both noticed, that the storytelling, whether we liked the animation at the time or not, was pretty solid. This story, they just weren't a bunch of one-shots. They were building on something here. Mm-hmm. And they were building this mythology in this story and this journey that these guys are going on, and why Quentin has to find these Jedediters to get their quickenings so he can become powerful enough then to eventually, you know, face off against Kortan and bring some balance here.
Right. No, totally agree. Yeah. We're now, since we're in episode, we're doing episodes 10, 11, 12, and 13. We're seeing a lot more of kind of like the narrative payoff and why Quentin and Ramirez are doing this and why it's important for these Jedediters to pass on their powers.
One thing that we need to mention here that you also have in your notes as well as I do is that there's an immortal buzz here. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting is all of the immortals are easily identified by some sort of magic gem that they have, whether it's in a piece of jewelry, whether it's in their belt buckle, which several of them have, mm-hmm. or in a necklace, and that they get the immortal buzz and the gem starts to glow as well. Now, this is kind of cool because it's unnecessary than hearing the sound of the buzz, but it looks kind of cool.
But it's necessary for kind of like the target audience.
This is right? true. This is true. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, maybe next Highlander convention, Norm, we dress up one of these guys and we get our own little, like, you know, buzz, like, gems, you know.
Could you imagine somewhere. That, like, cosplaying the animated series? I totally cosplay Malone.
Oh, gosh. Oh, man, that was... Now, you actually liked the attack of the thorn pods. You thought the sequence was done really
well. Yeah, I thought that was neat. It was, you know, the animation's actually really the only thing that was holding back kind of like the tension of that scene, because it was neat seeing these giant freaking spiked thorn pods like swallowing people.
Yeah.
It was very Body Snatchers slash kind of War of the Worlds slash, you know, any kind of like strange science fiction-y kind of show.
Right. Oh, yeah. Well said. Yeah. Definitely. And you have something you want to say for the record about Sahevi?
Okay. So the Sky People and people around town, they kept calling Sahevi a sorcerer or he was a magician. That may be the case. He was a botanist, but he was no illusionist. I'm just saying.
Here we go again.
I'm just saying.
Now, we said something before we started recording that I did want to mention here on the show. When we were watching these and both taking our separate notes, my television or whatever doesn't have closed caption. Mm. So when they say these names, we're spelling them out pretty much phonetically on the notes because we have no idea how they're spelled.
I know. And they're so so random and extreme, like these names.
They are.
Right?
They are. There are some weird sounding names.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was episode 10, Valley of the Thorn Pods. We got a little agricultural lesson on botany and how important plants are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, it was the enviro-shaming episode.
Yes. Well said. All right. Well, next episode, episode 11, is called Fallout, and that episode aired December 11th, 1994. And here is the synopsis. Ramirez is traveling through the desert with Quentin, Clyde, and her pet creature, Gaul. They arrive in a desert village that belongs to a tribe of friendly, nomadic blue men called the Tuorve. Since their village lies in an area hit by a nuclear fallout centuries ago, their genes have suffered mutations. Most of them now have blue skin, webbed fingers, and other usual traits. After a test with a rattlesnake, the chieftain takes the trio to see the Sandman, a deformed immortal once known as Prometheus. Or I think it's, what is it?
Well,
is it
the way I took it, they said Prometheus or Prometheus.
I think it's Prometheus. Yeah, it's Prometheus. That's what it is. Yeah. But it sounds like Prometheus. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He lives in an abandoned but still functional military base that still holds armed nuclear weapons. The nuclear fallout has ruined and mutated even his immortal body, so he wears a protective suit to spare the locals from his grotesque image. However, his biggest pain comes from his vast knowledge of everything atomic and nuclear and the horrific. Mm-hmm. And Norm. Mm. This is the episode that gives us the big answer that we've been wondering since episode one. And as we tell the listeners, we have not watched these episodes before. So this is new Highlander to us. And each of these episodes have been referring to the Great Catastrophe.
Right.
And we've been asking, what the heck is the Great Catastrophe? We now have our answer.
Atomic bomb. Or nuclear war. Yeah.
Nuclear war. And what's interesting about this, though, is when we actually get the backstory from Kortan.
Yeah.
In this, when he's talking about it, which I thought was pretty fascinating here. So that gets explained, and kind of we have Arrak in here as well, because the hunters were following Ramirez and McCloud, mm-hmm. and of course the green skinned people also observe this, and one of them named Faraz secretly meets with the hunters, so he's kind of like, you know, he's like the spy.
Yeah, he's a spy guy.
You know,
yeah.
He's working with
them.
He's
a sellout. Yeah.
And then there's the Asuan chief of the Green People meets with Ramirez and McCloud, and they are too. He's going to help them meet the Sandman, which, of course, is this immortal in hiding here. Mm-hmm. Of course, then Quentin is put through the snake test, which is interesting. It was kind of silly because, like, he had to kind of show his courage.
Right.
But the snake was trained, and the snake was going to attack him anyway, right. Which I thought was funny. And then Kortan wants to meet the Sandman because of his secrets of making the bomb. He wants to get the knowledge before Quentin does.
Right, yeah.
And then Ramirez explains to Quentin about man and making the bomb and how it led to the Great Catastrophe, which he wanted to intrigue and know the power. Now, which is known by Prometheus. This is the guy that's deformed, mm-hmm. and he's living as a recluse, and of course he's inside this, looks like some type of, like, radiation suit, and you can't tell what he looks like because he's horribly deformed. Mm-hmm. But Quentin and Ramirez find the old military base, and it's a silo base, as mentioned, and this is where the Sandman is supposed to be. Prometheus lives there, and he explains that to Quentin that you have to have my knowledge. But here's the interesting thing. Quentin, when he starts to realize the knowledge that he has and how destructive and painful that it is, he actually says no. He does not want his quickening.
Right.
What did you think about that?
I thought that was probably one of the more interesting parts of the animated series so far, because it was all about Ramirez introduces Quentin to an immortal Jedador who passes on the quickening knowledge. And, you know, they use that to salvage the, you know, the dire consequence of the episode. In this one, Quentin has seen firsthand, you know, and understood what atomic power can do, abuse of atomic power and the nuclear bomb. And he's like, no, I don't want this. I don't want any of what you know. And it pains Prometheus, because he's like, if I don't pass this on to you, my suffering continues.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really interesting twist, because one of the things I had got my attention, I didn't really have issue with it, got my attention, was that his immortality prolonged his suffering but did not protect him from radiation sickness and mutation.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Good point. Now, I want to get into some more of your points here, but I want to do a quick little more detailed wrap-up of the story here. Mm-hmm. So Kortan and the spy, they get ready to attack. Kortan enters the military base alone and challenges Quentin. Prometheus gives Quentin his quickening, but Kortan releases the missile launch.
Right.
He launches an actual nuclear weapon here. Mm-hmm. With Prometheus' knowledge, Quentin performs another missile launch to intercept it, and he does, and it destroys both missiles. Prometheus then sets a self-destruct that destroys him and the base, and Kortan barely escapes. Mm-hmm. Of course, by then, of course, our heroes have already escaped. So he's finally mortal again, and he gets to, you know, die in peace, but he destroys all of the weapons there and everything else. Now, I want to touch on something regarding the weapons, something that you said, Norm, mm-hmm. here. The flashback to the Enola Gay, mm-hmm. that was cool.
I thought that was really interesting that they put that in there. I mean, I think that because it's Highlander, you know, Highlander has flashbacks, but they actually did something in this episode that was very significant. You know, Ramirez was talking all the way back to something that was very historic. You know, it was the very first use of an atomic weapon on a civilian population, you know, and that's, it was.
And both Nagasaki, both places, Nagasaki and Hiroshima were mentioned in this too.
Right. Yeah. Specifically, Nagasaki.
Yeah.
When you see something like that in a child's cartoon, that's got to give you kind of like a little bit of a pause, you know, because it's actually historical lesson.
I want you to, this is the thing that I noticed too, and I'm really glad that you did, about what Ramirez was walking around the bomb area and what he noticed, because I've seen this in history.
Right, and there are images that actually corroborate what we're saying here. So in the flashback, when the bomb went off in Nagasaki, Ramirez was walking around the bombed out areas, and he was staring at a shadow on a rock. And what that is the flash of the nuclear bomb actually seared. It basically bleached the area around the rock, and the darkened area was basically where somebody was standing, where it did not allow light to pass through. So it basically became a shadow that was seared on the rock, because that person that was standing in front of the rock basically protected the rock from light bleaching.
Right.
And that person obviously was incinerated.
Yeah, strong message here about nuclear war. So what I'm getting then, the Great Catastrophe was basically World War III with just worse consequences.
Yeah, it basically destroyed or leveled the entire planet, except for the Jedidors, which, you know, it would be neat to see hopefully later on that they tried to prevent it. And if they couldn't, if the wheels were already in motion, then they basically said, well, we can't stop World War III from happening, but we can survive to help mankind later on. Maybe we'll see that, maybe we won't, I don't know.
You had some observations of what you liked seeing about the animated version of the Hunters.
I love these weird green, you know, Ayatollahs of rock and rollers.
I do too, man. You know? They're pretty cool.
Yeah.
But you know what though? They translate really well in toys, the ones that we've seen online.
They do. And they all have a number on their chest armor. It's like 417.
Yeah, it's like 417 or something weird like that. Yeah.
I don't know what that means, but it's cool. I love all the Hunter designs. I don't know. There's something about them that's very consistent. They're neat. They're obviously the embodiment of, let's see, this is 1994. So the Hunters would have been introduced already into the Highlander series. So yeah, they're just kind of like this. They're a threat. You have to have a threat. You have to have stormtroopers in science fiction, right?
Yeah, I'll agree. Yeah. But, you know, details of the blue skin people with being mutated with the webbed hands. And, you know, of course, one thing that we didn't mention in this episode, but we did in the other episodes, is that after the catastrophe, new creatures also eventually evolved, mm-hmm. especially these beasts of burden that they ride, these two-legged beasts. They kind of like a Star Wars Tauntaun, but they kind of looked more like maybe an Eopie from episode
one. Yeah, I thought they were more like Eopies.
Yeah, but with two-legged ones, and they're, you know, so they're kind of like their horses, mm-hmm. and they have saddles on them and ride them. But there's other creatures. So what's interesting about this is the nuclear war slash catastrophe has given the writers of this show a clean slate to basically, yes, humankind is evolved, and you see normal looking humans, but then you also see different versions of them, whether or not, you know, they grew through, you know, radiation or whatever, but then you also see new creatures.
And this kind of, it reminds me a little bit of the very beginning of Thundar the Barbarian, you know, in the distant future, there's a planet, a runaway planet hurtles between the Earth and the moon, unleashing cosmic destruction. And then 2000 years later, the Earth is reborn, a world of savagery, super science and sorcery. So all of technology has been pretty much decimated or destroyed, and you're dealing with how mankind is kind of trying to survive with, it's kind of like they went all the way back to the medieval or Stone Age, you know, where technology is no longer a factor and they have to basically learn things like replant the earth, you know, get clean water, get clean food, like don't plant in radiated soil. And now with this episode, you know that the earth has been ravaged by nuclear power.
And speaking of that, your last part of the notes here I want to touch on, and we did a little bit already, about how you mentioned how heavy-handed this episode was in talking about the devastation of nuclear war. Mm-hmm. And you liked the treatment of Prometheus.
I did, because, and I also loved the voice acting, because you could feel that this that this immortal was, he was done. He's like, I've waited this long for this Messiah, this Quentin McLeod, to show up and take my quickening. I want to die. He basically says, like, I cannot hold on any longer. And if it's either going to be Cortan or it's going to be McLeod, but either one of you guys, I'm giving up my quickening right now because I can't deal with the pain anymore. And that to me, it was a real good metaphor for, you know, the suffering of not just like one man, but the suffering of the planet, you know, and how this planet has basically just been, has been racked and ravaged. And I need to, something needs to start healing what has been done to it.
Well, quick little trivia here, so I decided to look and check it out myself. When you go on IMDb and you look at the voice casting of each of these episodes, Graham Haley played the voice of the of Prometheus, and he's done a lot of voice work. He's worked with X-Men, but what's interesting, he's also done some acting as well. But when I'm looking at his voice work, he did in 1995 Highlander, the last of the McLeods video game. He played the voice of Mangus. And then Highlander, of course, the animated series. And then Highlander, the Adventure Begins, the voice of Mangus as well. Mm. So this is interesting. He's done a lot of other, he's done Monster Force TV series in 1994, X-Men TV series from 92 to 94. This is where I think it's extra cool of him, because I remember this animated version of Tintin series in 91 and 92 that was released overseas. He did a bunch of voices for that as well. So very, very cool. And he also did, he was also in Babar, the TV series. So obviously they got some good voice talent for this as well. So, this episode here, Fallout, this is the last one we'll cover today this episode. But this one gave us the answers we've been asking for a while, Norm, about what the heck is this catastrophe.
Also, I thought it was a very mature episode, and I thought it was a really nice contrast to where we were with Valley of the Thorn Pods. Valley of the Thorn Pods, I'm a huge Star Trek, the original series fan. It just feels like I'm watching, you know, it just feels like the name of like a Star Trek original series episode. But Valley of the Thorn Pods was a little lighter. You're dealing with like subject matters like, okay, you know, let's deal with the ecology of the world and, you know, let's get the green belt started again. But this one, though, when you're dealing with, when you bring something as like, again, historically significant and heavy as the bombings of Nagasaki and Hiroshima, you know, the very first time that, and this was the United States doing this, remember, folks,
right?
You know, the very first time that nuclear weapon was actually used against human people, civilization, right? Yeah. That is something that is incredibly tragic as a piece of world history.
It is, definitely. Well, Norm, as we wrap this up here, I want to get your final thoughts of Valley of the Thorn Pods and Fallout. Let's start with Valley of the Thorn Pods. Ending reaction to that.
I thought it was a lot of fun. You know, it was great to kind of like get started again with the animated series. I think that watching Valley of the Thorn Pods, it just kind of massaged my brain to start absorbing like the animated series style again.
Yeah.
It was fun watching it. I like when they bring like these artifacts from like the past, like this bomber that had the fire water, the kerosene that they were draining off so they could burn the thorn pods. I like the fact that it was kind of goofy and you can see like, you know, these thorn pods being like body snatcher pods and stuff like that.
Do you think the fire water, the kerosene, gasoline, whatever was kind of, you know, to burn the thorn pods, do you think that was kind of inspired by the Brazilian rainforest that was kind of a, you know, getting eaten up, and, you know, because we had Fern Gully come out in like 1991 or 92 about Save the Forest and stuff. Do you think that was a little throwback to that and a little awareness? Like, you know?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, Turgis is the guy, you know, he's the guy that the village elder or one of the village authorities that's like, you know what? We're not going to do the right thing. We're going to do the wrong thing because the wrong thing is the easy thing to do. Right? But it gets the best results. So, yeah.
Translation, yes.
Yeah. So let's burn down everything and let's deal with it later, you know? And that's just like, yeah, that's so transparent, that message. It was incredible.
Agree with you regarding getting used to the animation and just, you know, I actually was kind of comfortable watching it, you know, and Valley of Thorn Pods. First of all, I was curious going into like, what the heck is a thorn pod? Of course, we found that out. But I was getting comfortable with it again and just, you know, enjoying, you know, seeing where they were going to go. And it's new Highlander for us, so I enjoyed that. What is your take on Fallout?
I think Fallout's probably one of the best episodes that we've watched so far. And I think it's because of two things. One, because the subject matter for a cartoon was actually very heavy. And two, I thought the performance for Prometheus was amazing. Because you really felt that this immortal was really struggling and really in pain and just like, you know what, I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. I know that we made this pledge to give all of our knowledge to the McLeods, but I offered it and he rejected it. It's like, what do you want me to do now? Like, you know, I've been waiting all this time. And he literally was on like a razor's edge of losing his sanity. And, you know, it was just really cool. And also, it was nice that we got Cortan back. I like the episodes where we have Cortan and the Hunters and kind of like that whole, the whole Magondan threat. I like that in the episodes.
I would agree. I think it's one of the best ones we've seen as of yet from the 11 episodes, I guess, that we're in right now. Mm-hmm. I agree. A heavy but mature topic, which is what I thought was really good about this. Good writing. As you said, love the voices, especially of Prometheus. I'm liking the look of the characters. And, you know, one of the things that I was very hard on when we first started watching it was the silly costumes, you know? And, they're growing on me because they're starting, I guess it was kind of a shock to the senses. You know what I'm saying? You know, just like if you had never seen a hair metal band before, never heard of it, all of a sudden they showed up in your front door and you're like, what?
You know, that's funny you mentioned that. I saw a video recently on YouTube and it's like children watching Kiss music videos.
I saw that, yeah.
And that's exactly the kind of reaction they had. They're like, what are these guys?
Right. But I'm actually content and comfortable. The shock value is now done. I'm familiar with the style now, familiar with the costumes. And now I'm actually looking forward to seeing all the different ways they're going to be doing this. And one thing that we're going to touch on the next episode that I'm kind of curious about is they really do a great job of changing the setting for each episode, whether it's cold out, snowing, desert, whatever. And it's fascinating to see how our heroes adapt to this and the creatures and or the different people that they meet. So definitely loved the Fallout episode. It was one of the best. So Kevin's Immortal Quickening Scale, what do you give Valley of the Thorn Pods, from one being Katana, Richie's Jacket, which means it sucks, to 10, Mythos?
I think I'll give Valley of the Thorn Pods a solid 6, I believe.
That is Xavier and Amanda. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. What do you give Fallout?
I actually give that a solid 8.
Ooh, Duncan and Cured One. Mm-hmm. Okay, good, good. Thorn Pods for me, I'm going to go a bit lower. I'm going to give it right in the middle there. Luther and Fitz at number 5. But I'm with you on Fallout. I'm going to give that a good 8 as well, a Duncan Cured One. Really, really liked it. I might even push it a little bit, maybe 8.5. But yeah, it definitely a good episode. Well, cool. All right. So there we are. Blood of Kings 76, Highlander, the animated series, episode Valley of the Thorn Pod, and episode Fallout. Norm, next episode, we're going to be talking about Blood of Kings 77, the episode The Courage of Love, but as you would call it,
The Courage of Love.
There you go. And the setup.
Okay. The setup. I don't know.
Well, recently on Blood of Kings, we've been busy, 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 busy. Of course, we did our Highlander TV series DVD box set review. We also did a great episode of the online CCG, which had an interview also with wonderful ladies doing talking about their sword experience. And that's Tammy Buckner and Priscilla. And also, if you go back a little bit further, we did a two-parter of Chamoli's Choice, where we talked about the Immortal Chamoli two-part episode with the commentary and, of course, a retrospective. And also, don't forget, we did a great interview, Kingmakers episode interview with the lovely Amanda herself, Elizabeth Grayson. Norm, we have some other stuff going on here on the Fandom Podcast Network. Why don't you go ahead and let our listeners know?
Well, we have our weekly fandom news show called Culture Clash that's hosted by Kevin and Kyle. And recently they have finished up their countdown to the Avengers Infinity War. And by the time that we've recorded this episode, we have watched it. Some of us watched this multiple times and we are still in shock. So we're going to disseminate our thoughts on that on a later Culture Clash that is coming
also,
soon.
I just want to tease real quick, Norman. I did a Star Wars confession that broke the internet. So if you don't know what that is, make sure you go back and check out that episode.
Yeah, you got to listen to Kevin's Star Wars confession. Because you know what? I don't think that you're alone in that.
Yep, exactly.
You know, they may not be the same confession, but I think that in some respects, sometimes you just have to get real with some of your fandom sometimes.
Yes, you do. Know?
So that is Culture Clash, and we have Couch Potato Theater, which is our show that is dedicated to the kind of entertainment that you own. But when you watch it on TV, you don't even bother going to your shelf. You just watch it on TV because it's that good. So being that good, coming soon, we have The Hidden, 1987, I believe.
Yes, yeah. And a little bit of Maxing Mad.
Oh, that's Maximum. Right. Recently, yeah. We also had Adam O'Brien. You know, he is a friend of ours and Ozzy. Yeah? He was an Ozzy.
Yep, out of Queensland, Australia.
Yeah, so I'm not even going to do an Australian accent. I think I'll get beaten up for that. Maybe by Aaron, maybe by Adam. Who knows? But Adam, he did this fantastic show with you, Kevin. And it was focusing on the Mad Max franchise called Maximum Couch Potato Theater.
Yeah, we covered the 1979 Mad Max classic. It's a four-part series. We've been covering all the Mad Max films, and part one is out now.
My favorite villain was Johnny the Boy. So,
Yeah.
He should have cut through his ankle. Because these handcuffs are made out of high tensile steel. So, great stuff going on with Couch Potato Theater. And we have another fantastic show, Time Warp, which we focus on 1985, the 80th of all of the 80s years. Of that decade.
That's right. And by the time this episode comes out, we will have part two done, and you're going to be one of the guests.
In the can, man. The can. So 1985, part two, coming soon. We also have Discoville, which is our show dedicated to Star Trek Discovery and the Orville. And we've just started our Quantum Drive rewatch of the Orville, and we are revisiting the 12 episodes of season one. We've just finished Old Wounds, which was the pilot episode. So hashtag you got wood.
Yeah, that is better.
That is better. And of course, we have Good Evening, our Alfred Hitchcock podcast with our friends Tom Caldwell, Brandon Shea Matala, and Chris Haig talking about the master of suspense, Mr. Alfred Hitchcock himself. And finally, we have The End Zone, which is our NFL and sometimes mediocre fantasy football advice.
No, it's always mediocre.
Oh, it's always mediocre? It's never...
But that's during the actual football season, yes. But by this time this episode drops, we're going to have an updated special talking about free agency, the draft, and all the other shenanigans that have been happening with the NFL over the last couple of months. Get you a little caught up. A lot of changes.
A lot of hate from the Cleveland Browns, or towards the Cleveland Browns from that draft.
Yes.
They're because of their 1-4 picks. Whatever. I don't care. Don't hate me. Okay, so that's what's going on with the Fandom Podcast Network.
Awesome. Thank you, Norm. Well, I'm Kevin on behalf of my co-host, Norman. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And join us again next time here on the Fandom Podcast Network for another episode of Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast. Norm, that sensation you're feeling is my Jeditor's immortal gift of my power of knowledge that I choose to bequeath to you. Please grasp my Jeditor's sword now. As the quickening is taking place, my sword is about to shatter. We are one. We are brothers. Goodbye, everyone.